Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. There is no formal opposition to Issue 4 on the Franklin County ballot tomorrow, but since Franklin County Children's Services is asking voters to approve a levy that would cost the owner of a $100,000 home $28 more a year than they paid last year, we thought it was a good time to discuss how the county spends that revenue these days and other child protection type of issues. So joining me in the studio today is Franklin County Children's Services Executive Director Eric Fenner. Eric, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And also Sherry Unkefer, who manages the Center for Child and Family Advocacy Program at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Sherry, thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
And finally, Roger Minner. He's the Vice President in charge of the Buckeye Ranch Treatment, Foster Care, and Family-Based Services.
Thank you, Ann.
Thanks,
nice
Roger.
Eric,
why don't we just get right down to brass tacks here with Issue 4 and talk about what the request is for and how it figures in people's minds when they go to the ballot tomorrow.
Yes. Well, first, Issue 4 is our levy that's replacing an expiring 3.15 mil levy with a 3.10 mil levy on November 3rd. This levy really, this is our operating revenue. If this levy is not successful, we would lose about $65 million from our 2009 budget, and in 2010, this levy would generate about $94 million. So when you lose that kind of revenue, the agency would be unable to operate in the manner that we've become accustomed. We've made tremendous progress over the last couple of years with keeping the number of children in paid care, out of paid care, keeping children in their own homes, partnering with our community organizations so that we can provide quality services to those children. Children don't have to go across town now to receive services. They can receive services in their own neighborhoods. And the partnership that we've developed over the last couple of years have been tremendous in strengthening how well we can provide such quality services to children in their own homes.
The idea of partnering with other agencies to provide these kind of services, a big partner in that is the Adam H., the Alcohol, Drug, and Mental Health Board for for the county, and it makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Why only 2 years ago did Children's Services start to rethink its relationship with the rest of the community?
Well, I think primarily we have not, as a history of both our organization as well as this community, we've not spent a lot of time sitting down and talking about the fact that we all, one, share the same values with regard to quality of services to children and families, but also recognizing that we're serving the same children. David Royer and I had the opportunity to be in part of a Robert Wood Johnson cross-system finance program for the better part of a year. That really put us together. You know, when you spend a lot of time sitting in airports and having dinner in different cities, you have an opportunity to really have a chance to explore what you're doing and how you do it, and you develop a relationship that becomes, it became very clear to me that we both have a very strong commitment to serving children in the community. And that really is how those conversations began. It's difficult to speak to what our predecessors did, but for David and I, we really believe that there was a partnership to be had with Franklin County Children's Services and the Adam Board, and we've done that, and it's formalized. It's formalized with our board. We have our board members involved in our policy council, and this is really moving along very, very nicely.
Children's Services is also part of the 2008 Alternative Response Pilot Program.
Yes.
Explain what that is and how did Franklin County get into the program?
Yes. Well, we applied to this program. And the Alternative Response Program basically allows us to have a separate path from our traditional path of traditional investigations. Depending on the level of risk, if it's primarily a neglect case where a child is not at imminent risk of child abuse, we can approach that family by using what we describe as an assessment-based intervention as opposed to traditional. When we have a traditional investigation, we first have to determine whether or not a child has been harmed, who's responsible. We have to check food supply. We have to see where children are sleeping. We have to know who everyone is who is sleeping in that home or living in that home. With alternative response, we have a chance to really engage the family in a conversation about what are the concerns here. And what we found with that softer approach and all those other methods that I mentioned in traditional are waived by law as a part of the pilot for alternative response.
Other other methods are required by law.
They're required by law, yes. But as a part of this pilot project called Alternative Response, those rules are waived. So we have this opportunity now to sit down and engage with the family. And what we've discovered is that families really are so forthcoming when they believe that you are interested in their well-being as opposed to trying to figure out who's responsible for what in their own homes. And we find out all the information that we need anyway. We find out where children are sleeping. We find out what the food supply. We find out what all the challenges are to a family. And then we can work with that family to develop a plan that they are committed to, that they've participated in. And as a result of that, we're able to provide a quality intervention. And that family, I think, is far better off because they've had the opportunity to fully engage in how we are able to resolve the issues that exist with that particular family.
You mentioned in the annual report, and I hope I get this right, that when you went the traditional route before, many of the cases ended up with judgments against the family or against the parents. Why would that be if so many of the cases now can be resolved with this alternative program?
Well, let me try to clarify. Whenever we have a finding of substantiation of abuse or neglect, it's important that the public understands that Franklin County Children's Services, when we make a filing in court, we're filing on behalf of the child, not against the parent.
Okay.
So if we have a finding and that child is in need of protective care, we make a filing in court. What Alternative Response does, there is not a finding in Alternative Response. So it's only focused on what are the issues, what is the plan, how are we going to link this family with services, and how can we move this family forward.
So what would trigger, just give us an example so I can make a sense about what distinguishes something that works really well with the Alternative Response pilot program and something that is suited for the traditional approach.
Okay. Let's do traditional approach first. Let's say we get a referral where a child has sustained injuries. Obvious marks and bruises or a broken arm or a child has received a major injury that's requiring medical attention and hospitalization. That's going to require a traditional response because that child is at imminent risk of danger or that child has been harmed. With Alternative Response, let's say there's a parent-child conflict or a child is not going to school or perhaps basic needs of a child is not being met. Let's say the parent may have a substance abuse issue. Now we have the opportunity to assess what the problems are, link that family with services, and if we can wrap that family with a quality intervention approach, now we have the opportunity to keep that family intact and then also link that family with those services. Now we don't have to necessarily get involved with the court because the child is safe and services are being provided, and we don't have to have that family now penetrate deeper into the child welfare system.
Some people might say that if a parent has a substance abuse problem, that automatically should qualify. They're more concerned about getting drugs, then how could they possibly be a good parent and good enough parent? Where do you draw those lines? Is it as squidgy as it sounds?
Well, it varies greatly from family to family, and we always want to be careful that we treat each family separately. But oftentimes, we find that individuals who have substance abuse problems, we have to remember that this is a disease. And if we treat that disease properly by quality services, quality programs for that parent, and then we have to monitor it very closely, of course. But if we can get that family engaged in a program, and then we engage other family members. Sometimes a grandmother or aunt or uncle can have the child stay with them on a temporary basis while the parent gets involved in treatment. Now we have a plan that everyone's involved in, and if we do that through a cooperative approach like what we have with Alternative Response, we have a much better outcome.
Just one more question.
Sure.
Going to this Alternative Response program, what about when you make a mistake? When you make a mistake in the traditional way, at least you know you've dotted all your I's and crossed your T's and something went wrong, but you can kind of go there and figure out what went wrong easier. Mm-hmm. With the Alternative Response, what if you miss something?
Well, I would love to say that that Franklin County Children's Services never makes a mistake, but we do. It's a human service that provides interventions to other humans, and we are not perfect. But we always have the responsibility and the authority to contact the court and provide a formal intervention whenever we discover that a child is at risk. So even though the case may be handled through the pathway of alternative response, if we should ever discover along that path that this child is now at risk, we can still go in, we can make a filing in court, we can just flip that over to a traditional response, and we carry it out that way. So we don't ever have to worry about, the community never has to worry about the agency compromising on the safety of a child. We can always provide those same interventions that we have along traditional. Because we go alternative response doesn't mean we can never go back traditional. If a child's safety is at risk, we have to flip that.
Okay, I lied. I have one more question. What percentage, how do you break it down statistically about, as far as after 2 years of working in the, or has it been actually a year?
Actually, it's been a year.
Okay. Are there any numbers you can point to that show the impact on the agency?
During the pilot, there was a certain number. 500 cases was the number of cases that were going to be used in the pilot project. But in this last year, we've actually moved that to a little over 1,000 cases in alternative response. Our goal by the end of next year is to have better than 65% of all of our investigations handled through the alternative response pilot.
And in a typical year, how many are we how many total?
In a traditional year, we engage in about 11,000 investigations every year. But here's a point that's really important. Better than 2/3 of all of our formal investigations do not result in a formal filing in juvenile court or a formal intervention on the part of the agency, meaning we open the case, child gets placed, and so forth. So only 1/3 result in that very formal involvement, physical abuse, sexual abuse, and so forth. So if we have this alternative response approach, we can approach better than 2/3 of our families with this more assessment-based approach, and I think families will receive a much higher quality of service.
Because before then, if they didn't fall into that first category, there was nothing else.
Well, remember, before alternative response, everyone got treated by the same traditional approach. We funneled everyone through the same door. Now we have two doors, one with less risk to a child and one with more risk. Where there's more risk, we have to do traditional, but when there's less risk, we can use alternative response.
Okay, we're going to take a break right now. If you have experiences with Franklin County Children's Services, positive, negative, you want to ask Eric Fenner a question, here he is. Call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And joining the conversation when we return, Sherry Unkefer, who manages the Center for Child and Family Advocacy Program at Nationwide Children's Hospital, and also Roger Minner. He's the Vice President in charge of the Buckeye Ranch Treatment, Foster Care, and Family-Based Services, a long name for something that's very interesting and we're going to talk about when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News, 50 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:19. Corporate partners help provide support for WOSU 820. Your business can join them and reach an educated, engaged, appreciative audience every day. Be associated with a trusted local and national source for accurate news coverage. For more information, contact Christine at 247-4469. That's Christine at 247-4469. And thank you for supporting WOSU 820 NPR News. In the weather forecast for today, sunshine this morning, a few clouds moving in this afternoon, and a high of 60 degrees. Cloudy skies tonight and a low of 40. For Election Day tomorrow, some sunshine and a high of 48. The low Tuesday night, right around freezing, a low of 33 degrees. And there is a slight chance of rain on Wednesday and a high of 50 degrees. And now back to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about Franklin County Children's Services, the Child and Family Advocacy Program at Nationwide Children's Hospital, and also the Buckeye Ranch Treatment, Foster Care, and Family-Based Services, and how all of these programs are working together now to help our kids in Franklin County. Roger Minner, he's the Vice President in charge of the Buckeye Ranch Treatment, Foster Care, and Family-Based Services. Thanks again for being with us, Roger.
My pleasure.
Tell us about your program and how that sort of fits into this matrix with the Franklin County Children's Services.
Certainly. Well, first, you commented before the break about my job title. I had nothing to do with that, first of all, but it does fit into this this partnership that we have. Over the last 4 or 5 years, the Buckeye Ranch has been striving to make all of its programs and all of its services family-based as opposed to child-centered. So whether it's treatment foster care and residential services, which we're well known for, or our growing number of community-based and school-based programs, we're looking to how to work not just with the children, but really primarily with the parents of those children, supporting them, teaching them how to gain the skills and the techniques they need to parent their children. So as children who get into these higher levels of care, they can take their children back and be successful in parenting them in their own homes and in their own communities, as well as children who are at high risk for being placed at other homes. The children that perhaps are identified through the alternative response, they can get linked into some of our programming, and we can go in and provide the right level of intensity that's needed so that they can stay home and stay together.
You know, a key phrase is treatment foster care.
Correct.
What does that mean?
Okay. Treatment foster care is not just providing a safe place for children to be, children who, for whatever reason at this time, can't be at home with their family or their relatives. But it also is a family that's highly trained, works along with community service providers, whether they are outpatient therapists, in-home therapists, the foster care clinicians themselves, to address some of the behavioral health issues that the children might present with.
Eric, how can you – this sounds more expensive.
Well, yes. The rate of treatment foster care or specialized care is higher than traditional care. But we have to remember that when we have a child in care in specialized or treatment, we're working on what the issues are that brought that child to our care. Sometimes you have children with mental health issues or parents that have mental health issues, but we want to make sure that that child is receiving a higher quality of care and treatment. And what Roger is referencing in treatment foster care, those foster parents have been trained, plus they generally work with a licensed social worker who also ensures that the child is receiving the level of care that they need.
And it's worth it.
It is absolutely worth it because now as we're working on the issues that are within that child and within that family, we now can really work on how can we bring that child back into the home and continue those services on a support basis once the child is back in the home.
And in addition to just being able to serve the child, which is what we've done traditionally in foster care, we're working our hardest to try to not only work with the child but engage that primary family of the child. Part of our modus operandi, if it's appropriate with child welfare, depending on the nature of the referral, we're reaching out to that mother or that father, and we're saying, you know, your son or daughter is with us in this home right now. This is what we do. This is what you can expect. What, right. You know, what does Johnny need? What does he usually do? Or, you know, what does Mary usually do before they go to bed? We're trying to be a partner with that family to help speed up that reunification process.
And the alternative response pilot program gives you more freedom to do that? Is that help or?
Well, not necessarily okay. In treatment foster care, because once we're in treatment foster care, there's been a file.
It's already through. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Okay. And Sherry Unkefer, you manage the Center for Child and Family Advocacy Program at Nationwide Children's Hospital. So you're not just fixing people's physically, you're getting into the whole deal now.
Absolutely. We are very interested in helping children heal from any concerns related to the emotional suffering related to maltreatment.
Okay. So how does that fit in with what Eric's doing?
Well, we
Children's Services?
We have a multiple layer kind of a relationship with Children's Services. The Center for Child and Family Advocacy is the child advocacy center for our community. And as such, we actually co-locate workers from Franklin County Children's Services in our building so that we have a very fast response when a family presents with concerns around child abuse. We also provide community-based intervention programs that are related directly to child welfare concerns. And so we have ongoing relationships with Franklin County Children's Service workers in order to help families heal, be able to stay together or get back together, whatever the situation might be.
But you had these relationships before a couple years ago, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that didn't change.
Well, I think they've gotten better.
Okay.
We understand our work and the others' work much better than we ever have. You know, when you live together,
yes,
you can really appreciate what the other person has to go through. And, you know, I've been in the field a long time. I will tell you that since we have been co-located with Children's Services, my understanding of the child welfare concerns have improved immensely. It makes the service better for the family because we have common language. We understand situations better. They know what we need. We know what they need. It works out better for family and customer service.
You know, my impression some years ago was that not just Franklin County, but child welfare agencies around the country some years ago, 15, 20 years ago, were trying to work to keep the families together, and that sort of backfired in a way. Were they not involving this more holistic approach when they were doing that? Is that the difference?
Well, I think here in Franklin County, I would say if you go back even 5 years, you had less of this. There have been two things that have really changed, I think. One, with projects like the Protect Ohio project that has allowed Franklin County, we're a pilot in that as well, to have a little bit more flexibility with regard to the Title IV-E dollars. And now we can look at how we can blur the edges a little bit about what we purchase with services. Generally, federal dollars were only used to pay for offset the cost of a child once a child actually comes in care. But by being a part of this waiver, we can purchase services not necessarily just for a child in care. So being able to invest more dollars into our community has also helped. The second thing I think is really important, you know, we're right now experiencing a 13-year low in the number of children in paid care. By reducing our cost of children in paid care, we can take those dollars and reinvest those dollars in the community as well. So as we build capacity in our community, we've taken also the opportunity with that to meet with our providers. We have provider forums where we invite providers into our agency so we can talk about what we're seeing, the kinds of needs and services our families, we believe our families need, and those organizations are building those services. So the collaboration that we're engaged in now, I don't think we're ever going to go back to days where child welfare agencies were isolated. And this is the trend you're seeing all over the country, that organizations are seeing the importance of collaborating. We have a shared value for families, but more importantly, we don't want to compromise. None of us want to compromise on the safety of a child. And once you discover that we have that shared value within our community, not just within our organization, the opportunities for improving the quality of our efforts just is enhanced significantly.
If I can just add, first, there was a clear demarcation, I think, between when Franklin County over the last few years has really consciously engaged the provider community. There are these provider forums that Eric has talked about. It used to be in our community that we talked about the mandates. Children's Services had the mandate of protection. Everybody else, or the Adam Board in particular, had the mandate of quality living. And that certainly is very much blurred. We all agree on the safety of the child. But over the last few years, probably and with a lot to do with alternative response, but the last few years, Franklin County Children's Services has engaged the provider community because they do care about the quality of life for the parents as well as the children. How do we make a difference? How do we put the supports in place? There's been a report. This was presented at the PC, the Public Children's Services Agency of Ohio, right?
Very good.
Yes. Yes.
The PCSAO.
Right. Institute of Applied Research from St. Louis. They've done an interim report on this alternative response. And one of the very interesting pieces is just what kind of tangible qualitative differences this has made for the families and how different they feel. You know, initially coming in, it says initially coming in, well, nobody likes anybody coming into their house and poking in their business. But the difference in their emotional response to this approach of I'm here to help. What do you need? What kinds of things can we get you? Whether it's help with rent, help with car repairs, utility bills, linkage to counseling, it's made all the difference in the world. And there are some statistical differences in the outcomes of this program.
A lot of times people just can't get to work.
Well, you know, and quite it's frankly, one of the things in law, we have very specific time frames. You know, we have to see a child within 24 hours or 72 hours, depending on the level of risk. With alternative response, those time frames are waived. So we can actually call a family. We can sit down with that family at 6 o'clock in the evening or on a Saturday afternoon. Now that you don't have those other restraints. And again, it's depending on the level of risk to a child, because we don't compromise the safety of a child. But now, if we can sit down with the family at 6 o'clock in the evening, and the family doesn't have to take off work, now we have at least a start to an engagement process that the family feels more empowered, because, you know, they're setting the time. So we start to give the family more of an opportunity to engage and to be empowered in the process of developing what's going to happen with their family.
And Sherry, you made the point earlier that the caseworkers are happier.
Absolutely. We've had the opportunity to meet with the AR caseworkers and the supervisors, and they really enjoy their jobs. They're talking about how they really believe they're making a difference with families, that they're really helping families move to the places that families want to be. And it's clear that when we are receiving referrals from families after they've gone through the AR piece, that families are more prepared to engage in the treatment process because they've just been through all of this collaborative assessment work with Franklin County Children's Services. And so I think one of the indirect outcomes is that Franklin County Children's Services is really helping the treatment people do our jobs better.
You know, at Yvette McGee Brown in September wrote a guest column for the Dispatch, and among other things, and the column was to caution mothers to think twice before leaving their children behind with a boyfriend. But she also cited some statistics that might not shock everybody, but it must sadden, including the increase in the number of child abuse-related deaths at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Yes. So you're, in some ways, things have gotten worse in just the last couple of years. Tell me about that and why you think that's happening.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have seen an increase in physical abuse concerns and child fatalities. Certainly, one of the popular kind of thoughts is that it has to do with families are feeling more stressed. The economy, as we all know, has hurt many, many people. And
certain segments long before many others.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so we're seeing unfortunately, that trickle down effect that a parent comes home, they're not doing well, they're feeling unempowered, they're feeling like they don't have very many resources, and take it out on the people that, again, are at home with them, and children are unfortunately being hurt. Now, I also think that we have to think smart about that, and that is that, just as we've said, almost all of us have been affected by economic downturn. Everybody has family stress, and not everybody is hurting children. And so it's important to find the families that do engage in that kind of unhealthy behavior. Again, it's the importance of Franklin County Children's Services. Do the appropriate assessment and link them with the treatment they need. Not everyone is hurting their children. Unfortunately, the severity of children being hurt has increased.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. I want to take this email before we get too far afoot from the issue for it. It does go directly to that. I don't like to change the topic, but I think it's a fair question. Lee asks, can you please ask your guest, Eric Fenner, to talk about the NAACP's opposition to the Children's Services tax levy as discussed in the Columbus Dispatch last week?
I appreciate that opportunity. First, I was surprised and disappointed that we did not get the support from the NAACP. It's important to cite that back in 2004, the NAACP took a very similar position. Following the passage of our levy, I reached out to the NAACP personally. I met with their staff, and I met with a group of parents who were concerned about the agency and our intervention. We had a very good meeting. We then engaged in a two-year mediation with a federal mediator to try to resolve the issues between the agency and the NAACP. Again, that process went very positively. The only outcome of that series of meetings that did not occur was that the NAACP representative was to be invited to join our agency's advisory council. Now, that's an advisory council that reports to our board, not to the agency, so I don't control that. But I did speak on several occasions on behalf of that. Unfortunately, that did not take place. But as recently as August of this year, the NAACP invited me to give a keynote address at their back-to-school program. I agreed to do that. I did a Q&A with family members who were present. It all went very positively. I had no indication that the NAACP was not in support of our agency's levy. Then when we contacted them a month or so ago to ask for their endorsement, they declined. I was stunned by that, to be quite frank with you, and I believe that we have done all that we can to be responsive to the NAACP and have not had any success. I would point out that we have received the support from the prominent African-American community, I would say. Every African-American newspaper, the Call and Post, the Columbus Post, Urban Trendsetters, Baptist Conference, the Ministerial Alliance, City Council, all of the community organizations that we've reached out to have provided us their support. I don't know that there's anything else that we really can do with regard to our relationship with the NAACP. I would not, of course, shut that down, but we have to move forward now. I just don't have a real understanding as to why they did not support this levy.
I'm being told that some folks have criticized that not enough has changed since federal mediators brokered that agreement that seeks to reduce the number of black children in foster care. So that number hasn't been lowered?
And even that's not true. Okay. Back at the time that we had the mediation, the number of African-American, the percentage of African-American children in our care was right around 54%. Today it's at either 48 or 49. Now, that's not a major decrease, but for the first time in many years, the numbers going in the opposite direction is going down as opposed to going up. But that was really not the issue as it was presented to me from the NAACP. They mentioned that there were still a few families that had expressed concern about what the agency had done when they intervened with their individual families. And, quite frankly, we're always going to have that to some degree. We can do everything correctly and still not have satisfaction on the part of a family. It is traumatizing a family when a child gets removed, even when that's in the child's best interest. And I have no question that there are a few people that have reported to the NAACP that they thought we handled a particular case wrongly. But I think that the reality is we have to, when we believe a child is at risk, we have to take the appropriate actions. But I remain open to trying to work with the NAACP to help them to understand more fully what our agency is trying to do. But I'm very satisfied with the efforts we're putting forth and the efforts we've made to keep children in their own homes, a 13-year low in children in paid care, 16-year low in the number of children in our custody, and our partnerships. We've improved significantly the quality of services to African-American children, but to all children in our communities. I'm confident we're on the right road here. And I think the support we've received from every African-American organization in our community, I think, speaks to that.
Is there some institutional dynamic? We have to take a break real quick, but is there some institutional dynamic that lends itself to putting more African-American kids into foster care or removing them from the family?
That is the $64,000
right
question. I believe that there continues to be in our community a bias toward referrals. Two out of every three children who are referred to Franklin County Children's Services are African-American children. So there is, I believe, a bias in our community that focuses more on referrals, more quickly making referrals to our agency. But what we have to do as an organization is make sure that we have quality alternatives. My strong belief is that if we have quality alternative sources and referrals and capacity building in our community, that we can link families to those services, we will reduce dramatically the number of African-American children that come into our care. And we can do that without compromising on any child's safety, but we do that by building capacity in our community so that these children have quality alternatives.
Okay, we have to take a break. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Googled, the end of the world as we know it.
Google expanded its definition of search. It began as searching text. And then they said, well, why can't we expand search to books, television, and all these other businesses that they began to bump into?
That's media critic Ken Auletta. His new book is about the all-knowing, all-powerful, ever-expanding Google. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in just about 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning. I'm Amy Jurovich, 50 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1140. Get the latest information from WOSU the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. Go to WOSU.org/email to sign up for one of our WOSU e-newsletters. And taking a look at the weather forecast, sunshine this morning, a few clouds this afternoon, and a high of 60 degrees. Cloudy skies tonight, and there is a slight chance of rain after midnight, a low of 40 degrees. For Election Day tomorrow, some sunshine and a high of 48 degrees. The low Tuesday night, right around freezing, a low of 33. Looking ahead to Wednesday, a 30% chance of rain and a high of 50 degrees for Wednesday. And now back to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820.
Support for WOSU comes from Integrate, helping to improve business performance through brand design and marketing communications for more than 20 years. On the web at integrateinc.com or at 614-421-0004.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about child welfare, children's services, child abuse, you name it. My guest today, Eric Fenner of the Franklin County Children's Services. Also, Sherry Unkefer, she manages the Center for Child and Family Advocacy Program at Nationwide Children's Hospital. And also Roger Minner, he's the Vice President in charge of the Buckeye Ranch Treatment, Foster Care, and Family-Based Services. I'm wondering about how all of these different entities link up to our criminal justice system. There was a case this summer of a 13-year-old arsonist. Repeatedly, he'd run away, repeatedly causing problems, setting fires, resisting, surprise, surprise, all the efforts to treat him. Now the prosecutor said back in July that they recommended he be put away in the Department of Youth Services facility until the age of 21. And I'm wondering what you all think, without being critical, the prosecutor has their jobs to do too. It's not a diss on them, but I'm wondering, what do we get back these days when we put a kid away for 8 years with that kind of a, what I would consider an extremely serious problem? Yes. You know, anyone, Eric, Roger?
I'm gonna leave the therapy comments to Sherry. Okay. I think Sherry and Roger, they're both outstanding in that. But I do think it's important that we reevaluate the way we treat young offenders like this. This child was very young. What concerns me is I'm not a big fan of institutional care. I never have been. I understand that we have to be cognizant of community safety, and that's the prosecutor's responsibility as well as law enforcement. But there is a way that children can be receive the level of treatment that they need, as well as be in a fairly secure setting until that treatment can take hold. But when we send kids away who commit criminal offenses, we have to remember at some point they are coming back, and they're coming back to our communities. We're better off if we can provide a quality treatment intervention and have that child come back after being treated for the behavior that has engaged in the criminal justice system.
Sherry?
Yeah, we are doing a better job of assessing children on the front end of the criminal justice system. So Nationwide Children's Hospital has a program at the level of the court. Once children are found to be or adjudicated to be delinquent, we're assessing them for their mental health needs and attempting to make smart recommendations about the kinds of interventions that they need. Both Children's Hospital and the Buckeye Ranch have invested in some evidence-based treatment specifically for what we term conduct disorder children. These would be delinquent adolescents who are hurting our community, hurting people in our community, working with them and their families, because this is a family issue, true, working with them and their families to provide them with the corrective supervision, thinking, outcomes, resources they need to make different decisions down the road. So there is a fairly significant effort in the community to help those individuals who are in the court system.
Roger?
I would just add, emphasize that, you know, parents want to do a good job, and a lot of times the children that we're talking about parents are at a loss about what to do. There's lots of other things that influence their choices, you know, what they get into. And that, the programs that Sherry's referring to really do focus on how parents can work with their children, regain control, and be able to set appropriate limits and work with that. Those involve just not just disciplinary actions, but they involve pro-social activities. They involve, you know, understanding their children's choices and what's influencing them. So there's lots of things that we're trying to put in place, you know, to help those young people to make better choices and to help the parents help their children.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. If you have questions or comments about child welfare in Franklin County, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Eric? Did you say something?
I was just going to say that just to follow up on Sherry's comments, we now provide through the Adam Board and through Nationwide Children's Hospital mental health assessors who are at the juvenile court. And the key is having a child have that kind of assessment quickly. The quicker we can have a quality mental health assessment like we're providing now, and then the progress we've made in identifying very strong evidence-based programs in our community that are having really impressive results with treating children with these very significant behaviors. You know, we're seeing that these kids can be treated in the community, but that's why it's so important, you know, to again reference our levy. We have to continue to invest in these kinds of programs. They're less costly than institutional care, and the outcomes, quite frankly, are much better.
I was reading a recent edition of Business First, and Pomegranate Health Systems of Central Ohio said it was drawn to build a new psychiatric care center here for adolescents because it sees a shortage of such options in Central Ohio. Do you agree? I mean, what are we talking about there in terms of options for psychiatric care centers for adolescents?
Yeah, there are a shortage of psychiatric beds in all communities. This is not unique to Columbus or Franklin County.
In every big metro area.
In every big metro area. There are a couple of schools of thought. One is that we need more beds. Then there's another school of thought that says, well, if you build more beds, they'll just get filled and we'll need more beds. And so the idea is kind of back to the theme that we're talking about today, to do better assessment and early intervention to prevent some of the issues that are needed. Certainly psychiatric beds and children going into short-term hospitalization stays will always be needed in our community. There are children who are at risk that are in crisis. They need an immediate and safe response. However, as we get smarter about the types of intervention we do, we can provide services to children and, again, their parents, their families, to help them manage some of the issues while they're maintaining in the community. So while beds are important, the right programs to prevent the need for psychiatric hospitalizations are perhaps more important.
Roger, is that an issue for you at Buckeye Ranch?
Well, we, you know, one of the things that we do provide at Buckeye Ranch is, I didn't go into detail about all the different programs we have. In our Grove City campus, we have locked, secure residential care, and we have an open campus residential care. The intensity of the services are the same, but one of the areas helps us serve children who are at AWOL risk or who really need to be, you know, maintained in a particular space. Of those, I think it's about 34 beds. We have two of those beds that are designated. They're funded through Franklin County Adam Board, but what they do is they are geared just for crisis intervention. They're geared for children who present in the community in an acute state of crisis, and they can come into those beds. They're managed through the NetCare organization. They can come in there for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, and then they work with the whole team. Either a team is assigned, you know, a service team, or their existing team, and get them back into the community immediately so that they can be back home again.
Sometimes I think that you nod your heads and you know exactly what Roger's talking about when he says an acute crisis, but I don't. I don't know what an acute crisis is anymore. I was wondering if you could give us some sort of range about what are we talking about?
Well, we can talk about everything from a scenario where a young person is at high risk for committing suicide. They could have gone as far as having a plan and the means, but they've been willing to contract, you know, so that they do need some – some 24-hour supervision, eyes on, while we put together a plan in the community to help that child be safe for him or herself when they get back out. It could be a situation where there's a conflict, a severe conflict between the parent and the child. Mm-hmm. So once again, it might not be so much just an internalized problem, but an externalized problem. It can range the whole gamut. Yeah.
The thing that we want to really try to do here, and we're making progress in this direction, and that's to build a continuum of care for our children. That children come into our organizations all along a continuum, from children who are in need of immediate protection to children who are in need of an acute bed. But then there's so much in between, and we are making such tremendous progress. And this is why the collaborations that you're hearing us speak about is so important, because no one organization can do that, can create that kind of continuum alone. But as the child welfare agency, we have to be in a position of leadership, and that we continue to work with our community organizations to ensure that that continuum of care exists for our children. And the better we progress at building that, I think you'll start to see the quality of care for children in Franklin County, I believe, is going to be the best in the country.
Yeah, Roger?
I was just going to say that absolutely, because Sherry and the Buckeye Ranch and all the other community organizations are we're doing our work out there, and we're hearing what exists and where the gaps are. And it's so important now that Eric and Children's Services is listening and having that dialogue, so that we're not empire building out there just doing something that makes sense to us but doesn't make sense to the community. The resources are scarce. They still are scarce. And so we need to be very smart about it and not duplicate our efforts.
One thing that I thought was interesting, and partly because of what you were doing at Children's Services, but also because how recently you started to do it, not you, but the agency, is dealing with kids who age out of the system. Before that, once they hit, was it age 17 or 18?
18.
They were done, and
yes.
Your responsibility ended, and that's changing.
Yes, we're making tremendous progress in developing very quality transition plans for kids who are aging out of the foster care system. Partnering with organizations, we're seeing a significant number of our kids going to college. But what we discover is that once a kid goes to college, he's 18 years old, we still need that support. So we've matched them with mentors that provide a real high quality of care. And this is making such a difference for our children. Being in a position where when a child turns 18, as many of us, just because you turned 18, there's nothing magical about that, providing that level of support. And we're making really, really good progress there. I'm happy about that.
I want to get to a few more things before we get going. One thing that's popped up in the news lately, and I know it involves, particularly Sherry and Eric, is the Safe Haven Law, and whether it's working or not and how it works. That, of course, is the state law, and I guess every state in the country has a law that permits newborns to be dropped off at a hospital or a fire station, or I guess a police station as well, within, now it's 30 days of birth. It used to be 72 hours. Within 72 hours. And there's been criticism of that too many people are just giving birth in a hospital and walking away, denying the child, the newborn, the knowledge of their background, their genetic background, if nothing else, and that it's just making it too easy for people. Can you talk about that a little bit, Sherry, from your end of it and how that's working?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's so much to think about in that question. There's so much value in that question. And so as you're talking through it, it's like, boy, all the different ways that you can think about those pieces. From our perspective, the protection of the child is critical. And while certainly your point is well taken, and is it too easy? Well, maybe. But if a child has the opportunity then to grow up in an environment where they're loved and they're nurtured and they're wanted, that's a win, or certainly sounds like a win to me. And my understanding is that, the homes that are available for newborns and infants are still very strong, and there's still a lot of them, and children are able to live in secure families and live, very healthy lives. So I appreciate your point. But if we're helping a child continue to grow in a healthy way, it's hard to argue against that.
Some folks have said maybe we're not doing enough as a society to help people with just the very things that you're doing with the programs that you've been implementing over the last couple of years, is to help them help themselves and make them feel like they can support a child?
Well, I think it's important to remember that what makes good policy is good policy debate. And I think every issue has this kind of discussion. But we have to remember what Safe Havens Law was created to do, and that was to provide a mother an alternative to leaving a child in a high-risk situation, like abandoning a child in a trash can or abandoning a child on a curb and so forth. I think it is inconceivable that a woman would be in a hospital, have a baby, see a commercial about Safe Havens and decide, oh, I'll leave my baby here. I think the decision that a woman makes to walk away from a child is one that she has grappled with. And I believe that she has made a decision that she can't care for that child, but she wants that child to be safe. I think it is responsible to have a child in a hospital. And if you're having a child in a hospital and you decide to walk away, that is one of the reasons. Remember, there are multiple places where you can leave a child, but they're all so the child can receive the medical care. I think there needs to be more data gathered. There needs to be more research to this. But it really does concern me when you start to hear whether or not this is a good idea. We don't know how many of the children who have been surrendered as a result of Safe Havens the mother would have made another choice if that law had not been enacted.
A couple issues. One is, and I shouldn't ask two questions at the same time, but I will.
You're fine. It's your show.
Is how it's like if the tree, you know, falls in the woods and nobody's there to hear it, how do you know it? You know, does it make a sound? Okay, so if people are allowed to anonymously drop off their kids, if you want to call it abandonment, that's a, you know, a word. But whether it's walk away from the hospital or leave the baby at a fire station, how do you know? You can't go back and query them about what their reasons were. And then, and another issue brought up, again, shouldn't dump to them, but the whole issue of somebody sitting in a hospital. When I gave birth, no one showed me a commercial on the Safe Haven law. In fact, one of the biggest criticisms of it has been that it's not publicized. And the very people that need to know about it the most aren't getting to it. And the last time I heard from the state, it's like, well, you know, it's the law. And they didn't say anything about publicity, too.
Right.
So I just dumped two things on you.
But I think that's the reason that we did the press conference back in the summer, because there wasn't a lot of information. And no, that wasn't necessarily the responsibility of Franklin County Children's Services, but we certainly saw a need of raising awareness and providing more information to the community about that. But to your first question with regard to that decision, you know, I just think that, no, you're right, we don't know. We can't go back and query those mothers to find out what their decision was. I think we have to take them at what they did. And the decision they made was to walk away. And the decision they made was to walk away with that child safe. And I think at the very bare roots of Safe Havens, that's what that law was intended to do, to allow the mother the option to walk away and leave that child safely. And that's why I agree with you that more research needs to be done. And there are probably smarter people than me that can do that. But for me, I share with Sherry, our primary responsibility is to ensure that that child is safe and that the child can receive the medical care they need to make sure that they get a good start in life. And that's what we're trying to do with Safe Havens.
Sherry, what about the publicity issue?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We're talking about the Safe Haven law, but we clearly don't have everything that we need in place because our community experienced two very high-profile child drop-offs in the parking lot of Meyer.
On a front stoop of an abandoned house.
Absolutely. Right. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, what we have in place is not comprehensive enough yet because we're still not reaching everybody who believes that they're not in a position to parent their child. The media influence, media is good, media is bad. But the call, there's still a call to action that needs to be answered because we're not reaching everybody who's in that decision.
The woman who left her newborn on the front porch or the front stoop of an abandoned house, of course, she barely speaks any English. And if the publicity already is sparse enough, whether it's going to be printed in other languages is another whole question.
We did print our materials in Spanish and in Somali. So, yes, we are stepping up to that.
And we also don't know what these women are facing who are having the children. Yes. You know, the whole – still many teen pregnancies are fathered by adult men. And so, you know, are the mothers really in a position to be able to call forward the concern?
And I've got to call an end to this conversation. You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest today, Sherry Unkefer at Nationwide Children's Hospital, Eric Fenner, Franklin County Children's Services, and Roger Minner at Buckeye Ranch Treatment, Foster Care, and Family-Based Services. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.